Hello, I'm Sean Lay. Thanks for downloading the BBC's World Tonight podcast from Wednesday, the 6th of November. James Kumarasamy is in Wisconsin, one of the American states which flipped from Democratic to Republican in this election, helping to secure Donald Trump's victory. As Kamala Harris concedes, what lessons is her party taking from defeat? On the night, Prince William awards his latest Earthshot Prize for the environment in South Africa. How might a US president sceptical on climate change impact international efforts? Lise Doucette has some of the global reaction to the presidential election result. And I've been discussing how US democracy handles a slam dunk election in which, as is now being predicted, the same party controls both houses of Congress and the White House.
You're listening to The World Tonight with James Kumarasamy in Wisconsin. And it was the result in this Midwestern state, announced at around 4:30 a.m. local time, that took Donald Trump over the line and back to the White House at the end of this momentous presidential election campaign. A couple of hours ago, both his Democratic opponent Kamala Harris and the man he'll succeed in the White House, Joe Biden, called the president-elect to concede. Kamala Harris, the vice president, had hoped, of course, to be the history maker, the first woman in the Oval Office, the first person of mixed South Asian and black heritage to become America's commander-in-chief. Instead, it is Mr. Trump who has rewritten the history books and, for now at least, redrawn America's political map. He got the young out to vote. He did much better amongst Latino voters than Republicans had done in the past. In fact, he did pretty well across the board. We are doing pretty well because we're back in Solly's Grill in Milwaukee. If you were listening to the programme on Monday, you will know all about its signature dish, the Butter Burger. Maybe you're dreaming about it now. Who knows? We do not know whether Donald Trump is a fan of Butter Burgers, but we do know he'll become the oldest person to be inaugurated ever when he becomes president in January. That's after Kamala Harris has one of her final, rather bitter jobs to do as vice president. In the US Congress, she will be the one officially declaring that Donald Trump is the next, the 47th president of the United States. Well, let's remind you now how we got here from 4 years ago when the once and future president left Washington in disgrace.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
The U.S. Capitol has been placed on lockdown as angry protesters surround the building.
Take that house! Take it now!
Many of the senators and representatives who plan to object to the Electoral College count changed their minds in the final hours. And that includes one of President Trump's closest allies.
Trump and I... We've had a hell of a journey, but today, all I can say is count me out, enough is enough.
The House has voted to impeach President Trump, making him the first U.S. president to be impeached twice.
Guilty, count 32, guilty, count 33 and 34, guilty. That is Donald J. Trump, defendant in New York, found guilty on all 34 felony counts.
And there are other cases that are pending against Donald Trump as a criminal defendant. The difference is that we now know as a country what it is to put a former president on trial.
The total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either.
Take a look at what happened. Oh.
With faith and devotion, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States.
I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve.
Well, the almost unbelievable story there of Donald Trump's journey from the events of January the 6th, 2021, through to the early hours of this morning, actually before most broadcasters here had called the race, but with his victory all but assured. Well, in the past hour, Kamala Harris has also addressed the nation to formally concede the race.
Now, I know folks are feeling and experiencing a range of emotions right now. I get it. But we must accept the results of this election. Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition, and that we will engage in a peaceful transfer of power.
She ended with a rallying cry for her supporters, making a specific point, a pointed one, you might say, about the importance of accepting election outcomes.
We owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
We will hear from a friend of Donald Trump's a little later and from a dejected member of the Kamala Harris team. First, though, I've been getting reaction to this election result from some of the customers here in Solly's Grill in Milwaukee.
Well, I'm Dale from the Wisconsin area.
And this is your wife?
My dear wife.
Sandy. And this is the best Butterburger in Wisconsin.
More publicity for Solly's. They're going to absolutely love us.
Great.
Now, tell us, we've had a presidential election. Donald Trump is going to be president again. How do you feel about that?
Well, as a businessman, he will straighten his country out. As a person with a personality, he's not the easiest person to put your arm around and like. But he gets the job done. And the same thing, I compare it to like a surgeon. If I'm going to go have surgery, I don't care if the guy's got six fingers on each hand. If he's the best surgeon, I want him. For me, he's the best guy out there.
So you're sitting on the fence.
Yeah.
Really? So look, you're from Wisconsin. You know, this state, it's always so close. It was close again.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, 1%. Yeah. In it, less than 1%, I think. What do you say to the other 50% then, who are now in mourning, think this is the end of the world?
Well, if they quit calling us names and labeling us, that might help. And if you call me a deplorable, it's like, well, what did I do? I voted for the person I believed was a better choice. You don't call me all kinds of names about it or tell me you're going to leave the country. And they don't leave. That's the problem. You know, I'm willing to chip in to ship them out of here and send them over to Venezuela, wherever else they want to go. But
I want to bring you in. I know you're standing there. But I mean, what is your take on why he is one, why he is a popular president for you?
Because of his energy. He will talk to anybody and open up to anybody, and people feel like they can understand him.
He's a 78-year-old guy, the oldest person to be elected president. He's going to keep that energy up for 4 years, do you think?
Well, my husband's only 68, and Donald Trump has 10 times more energy than him.
Want some more coffee, honey? There you go.
My name is Cornelius Whiteside.
And how do you feel about this election result?
I'm surprised that with all of the outstanding issues with Donald Trump, the court cases, and him never conceding that he did lose a race from the 20 election, kind of surprised. Our country is really divided.
What do you think is going to happen?
I'm waiting to see, because he was really being hostile, and now he says he's going to bring everybody together.
You sound skeptical.
I have my reservations.
Some views there of customers here at Solly's Grill, Northern Milwaukee. I'm looking on the menu at the homemade pies. I must admit, they look rather good. Cool key lime pie is one that we all want to sample here. But I'm joined by someone who's given us a very warm welcome. You see what I did there, Glenn? Here, Glenn Fieber, who is the owner of Solly's Grill. Well, first of all, thanks very much for hosting us. You are a happy man today, aren't you, because you are a Donald Trump supporter. Why did you think it was important for him to become president again?
My biggest reason for that was we need a strong president. And that's what's happening in America today, and that's what's happening in Israel today. That's what's happening in Ukraine and what's going on in China. In Taiwan, we need a strong president, and we need a president that is actually And it did happen. We got a president that has dealt with all of these countries, and especially also North Korea. So he's very experienced.
What about domestically? As someone who runs a business, what have the last few years been like for you?
Yeah, the last few years, especially after COVID, has been a hell. And it's been very difficult to keep a restaurant running. And not only a restaurant. And I don't want to be singled myself out here. The auto shops or camera shops, any small businesses going on in the United States of America right now is having a hard time. We're being taxed. You know, we can't wait to see what President Trump is going to do with small businesses.
Well, he says he's going to cut taxes. That's going to help you. I mean, the other thing actually he's talked about is taking taxes off tips for people. Is that a good?
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing because we have a lot of problems trying to get good people and good workers. This will, I think, help the restaurant business substantially.
Well, a lot of workers who have come into America have come from other countries. They are the immigrants, undocumented in many cases, who are here. Is it not going to be difficult, though, without them, if Donald Trump follows through on his promise to deport large numbers?
Yeah. On that subject, America has been inviting people in from Ireland, Germany, France for many, many years. It's still going on. It'll go on forever. But we have to control it. It has been uncontrolled for the last 12 years. And we've got a president in there now who's going to control it. I don't think he's going to be a Hitler, as you know, the word has gone out, he's going to be a Hitler. He's not going to be a Hitler. I think he's a very, very intelligent man, and I think he's got a head on his shoulders. We know he does. Nobody could go through what he's gone through in the last 12 years and not be an intelligent and man has got a good head on his shoulders. He can take a lot. And he's gone up against everybody bigger than him, and so I think we've got the man that we need to run America right now. Let's hope that he can bring America together.
Well, that's a big one, Glenn. We certainly had the man we needed to host us here in Milwaukee, Glenn Fieber.
Thank you,
the head honcho here at Solly's Grill. Thanks so much.
Well, we thank the BBC for coming in. It's been a huge honor for us. Thank you for choosing Solly's.
Well, thank you. We're going to consider now Donald Trump's policy agenda, which includes some pretty big ticket items. They include, of course, deporting millions of illegal migrants, as I mentioned, slapping tariffs on imports, especially from China, and brokering peace between Russia and Ukraine. Now, I've been speaking to a longtime friend and ally of Donald Trump, Chris Ruddy. He's CEO of the conservative news organization Newsmax, and he gave his predictions for how Donald Trump will try to deliver such an extensive program. Since he spoke to Donald Trump last night, I began by asking him how the president-elect is feeling.
The president was in a buoyant mood, ebullient, very happy about what was going on, very excited about the results. He knew pretty early on that he was going to probably win just based on voter turnout. We all knew earlier in the day the Democrats were simply not turning out for Kamala Harris, especially in the big cities like Detroit and Philadelphia. She just was not a turn on. And President Trump had just connected with people. I spoke to him right after a speech last night at about 3 a.m. in the morning. We had a phone call. We spoke for about 5 minutes. He was really excited. He was tired, he told me, but he was very excited about the plans that he has for the country. And he thinks he has a really important job. And he referenced in the conversation the assassination attempt and that he had survived it and that it gave him a lot of meaning to what he needed to do.
What can you share about those plans?
You should ask him what his plans are.
I don't think he's going to talk to me today, Chris. You are, though.
But I can tell you that in the conversations I've had with him, he's very concerned about the international situation. We've had a meltdown with China and the Taiwan situation. Korea seems to be right on the edge. And then you have the Ukraine war, the first major war in Europe, the Middle East with Iran. So the world is on fire. And I think he feels this is where he can make a difference. He's supportive of Ukraine. This thing that he's against Ukraine is nonsense. He supports President Zelensky. They had a very good meeting in New York. He liked him when he was president of the United States. Previously, he liked Zelensky. So he understands, but he also wants to get a peace agreement.
Does he have a plan?
Well, in his mind, he has a plan, and he's laid out the rough edges of that, which is to let both sides know they have to come to the table, and the side that doesn't come to the table gets penalized. And he wants a discussion and a negotiation, and he thinks there needs to be a settlement. So I foresee, now he hasn't told me this, I foresee that he's going to continue arming the Ukrainians pretty significantly. That's not going to stop. He's going to continue giving aid to Ukraine. That's not going to stop. He will probably reach out to the Russians. By the way, I think it was not true that he had all these conversations. That was just made up stuff. He
did
not have these. I believe that is not true. I think he's going to come in here with a positive thought. I know some people think that he's going to be on some vengeance tour or something. I don't see that. I think he will be trying to get his agenda. He only has 4 years.
Well, he has, Chris. He has talked about retribution. I saw posters here in Wisconsin, Revenge 2024. It was part of the pitch, wasn't it?
Well, he also says, let's fight these people. Let's knock them out. He uses rhetoric that's a little hyper. I think there's a very significant judicial system we have in the country that's not going to allow the targeting. I do think most people agree, and I think it was one of the reasons he won, especially black men, felt like he was targeted by the justice system as they believe they have been, and that it was judicial overreach. And I don't think he wants to do the same thing. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that we'll have that same issue.
He's given some pretty strong indicators of what he wants to do. I mean, one big thing, of course, is on immigration, which was a huge issue in this campaign. He's talking about deporting millions of undocumented workers. Is he going to be able to do that? And is he going to be able to do it quickly, do you think?
Well, they're talking about doing it. I think it's a bad idea. I think they should have a systematic approach. I think they should give restitution to people that are here that look like they're obeying the laws and have a plan of restitution where they pay some fine. Or there is some indications, like the Venezuelans emptied their jails. If they're criminals here, there's some indication they're behaving badly. Yes, I think people should deport it if they're misbehaving. I personally don't believe that we should take that step, but I think it's very logistically very difficult to do. I think Kamala Harris lost the election. One of the reasons was the public did not want an open border. What country allows 15 million people just to come across its border? And then you give them credit cards and first-class hotels and plane fares around the United States. It was insane. And I think it's why he won the popular vote. He didn't just win the Electoral College. He won the popular vote. I think he will take he'll moderate his position. I could be wrong. I think he will. I hope he does. I hope he has a plan. You know, Hispanics voted with him in much bigger numbers. So that was very, very good.
Donald Trump's friend Chris Ruddy there. Well, as we mentioned, Kamala Harris has made a public concession now at her alma mater, Howard University in Washington, D.C. Democrats have been pretty hard to come by for interviews today, but the process of dissecting this difficult loss for them, not just of the presidency, but of the U.S. Senate as well, is already beginning. Lindy Lee is a political strategist. She was on Kamala Harris's National Finance Committee. She is also women's co-chair at the Democratic National Committee. And shortly after the result of the election was confirmed, but before Kamala Harris spoke, I asked for her reaction to the Democrats' defeat.
I'm at a loss for words. I'm still processing everything, but I'm already doing a bit of a postmortem, and I've kind of reduced our loss to four primary reasons. The first one being immigration. Biden's executive order should have come 3 years ago, not in 2024. And we were just unwilling to admit that things went wrong. I think a little bit of humility in that regard would have been helpful to the American people to acknowledge that, yes, our border could have been more secure. Having said that, I do want to point out to our listeners that Trump was the one who destroyed the bipartisan border deal. He wanted migrants as a campaign issue, which he got. Number two is inflation and the economy. Inflation has come down to 2.1%, but cumulative price hikes are still very much an issue. And number three would be Tim Walz, the choice of him as VP versus somebody like Governor Josh Shapiro, who may have been able to help to deliver the critical battleground state of Pennsylvania.
Fourth reason.
I have one final reason. I don't think President Biden should have run for re-election. And the fact that he stayed in the race for as long as he did really hurt us.
Before Kamala Harris herself speaks, what about her? What about her campaign?
I think one thing she might have done differently is expanding the daylight between her and President Biden. This is a very anti-incumbent mood, environment that we're in, and it's not just a uniquely American issue. This is the case around the world in countries like Japan, Canada, and also across Europe. You see it a lot of people are just generally disgruntled about their leaders and they want to throw them out. And inflation is a big reason why.
Let's have a look at what else happened. You lost a popular vote. You have lost support amongst traditionally strong base for you, like the Latinos. Women didn't come out in the numbers that it had been expected, young voters as well. How would you describe what has happened, and how do you come back from this?
We have to acknowledge that America has taken a rightward shift. That is just empirical data that we need to contend with. We cannot be living in our bubble. We need to understand, for example, I'm a naturalized citizen, by the way. I'm a naturalized American. I came here the right way. My family waited in line, you know, in order to come to this country. And we follow the rules. We didn't jump the line. We didn't ask for any favors. And so I think Democrats are maybe incorrect to assume that Latino Americans were all willing to jump on board simply because Democrats were lax on immigration. That's simply not the case, because a lot of these Latino Americans, they've been here for generations already. And their views on immigration reflect largely are the same as Americans in general. And that's
how I was actually out in a place called Whitewater, not far from here, which has had a focus of the Trump campaign, where they've had a lot of new undocumented migrants. We spoke to exactly that, a Latino, a Mexican-American who'd been here for decades, who said it's not fair that people come here illegally. And that he said he was probably going to vote for Donald Trump.
I came here as a baby, basically. I've been here for 30 years. This is basically the span of my lifetime. I don't think it's fair for people to jump the line. My family worked so hard. We came here with $200. We escaped communist China. And so for me, I don't think it's fair that people can just waltz in across our southern border. So I think that's something that Democrats really need to think carefully about, that having strong borders doesn't mean that we're bigots. I think we can hold two truths at the same time, that we are kind-hearted people, but we also want a legalized and organized manner of immigration. I don't think that's asking too much.
Can I just end with a question, because you are the women's co-chair at the Democratic National Committee?
Oh, geez, I know what's coming.
It's the second time the Democrats have nominated a woman for the presidential candidate, and the second time one has lost. Is America just simply not ready for a woman as president?
Given the results of last night, clearly we're not. I'm just looking at the empirical data, and the data says we're not. It's unfortunate.
Lindy Lee there, who was on Kamala Harris's National Finance Committee with her reflections on the Democratic candidate's defeat here at Solly's Grill. I have to say the double horseshoe countertops have emptied out a bit, which means that there is room perhaps for some, the next sitting of the butter burger loving team from the BBC. So with that, I'm going to hand back to Sean, who's in the studio in London.
I'm going to leave you to your early dinner. Thanks very much, Jamie. Donald Trump is very concerned about the international situation, Chris Ruddy said there. Many of the world leaders who encountered Mr. Trump the first time around are long gone, Theresa May and Angela Merkel among them. Among those who were around at the time, France's President Emmanuel Macron, who took office in the same year as Donald Trump, spoke today of cooperating with the US, but also of developing a more united, stronger, more sovereign Europe. And what of those at war in Europe? And indeed in the Middle East? Well, the BBC's chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, is in Jerusalem. Lise, where you are right now, how much of a boon will the US result be for the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu?
Let me begin, Jean, by picking up on that comment by Chris Ruddy. He talked about the expression of world on fire, and that President-elect Trump was very worried about it. Well, if any region is on fire, it's here in the Middle East. And what was really on full display today was the close personal and political relationship between Donald Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He was one of the first to congratulate him in a warm, friendly message this morning. And then later on, he became, it seems, one of the first, if not the first, foreign leader to speak with Donald Trump. And the Israeli readout about that conversation said it was warm and cordial, but significantly it said the content was about working together for Israeli security and also the Iranian threat, putting the region, most of all putting Iran on notice that this is one of the files he wants very much to work with Donald Trump on. Now, Donald Trump sent very conflicting messages during his election campaign. He was reported to have told Prime Minister Netanyahu, do what you need to do. But he also said repeatedly, finish the job. And many are now asking tonight, what does finish the job mean? All of the congratulation messages from Arab leaders said they hope to work with Donald Trump on achieving peace and security in the region. How can he square that if he gives a freer hand to Israel to carry out what it wants to do in the devastating wars in Gaza and Lebanon and striking harder against Iran? Those are the big questions on minds tonight.
And in Europe, how could Donald Trump's return to office affect the Russia-Ukraine war?
Again, you listen to Donald Trump and you can't help but thinking he just doesn't understand the complexity of it. Our listeners remember his very high-profile, high-stakes summitry with the North Korean leader. It was said at the time it was the most ill-prepared summit ever seen in American diplomacy. He just thought he would walk in without any kind of preparing for how to deal with this very cunning operator, this reclusive leader. And of course, it never achieved the goals. Similarly, the fact that he thinks that he can solve it in a day, he said he expects to solve it before it takes over in the White House. Interestingly, Chris Ruddy said that he thinks that Donald Trump will continue sending those eye-watering sums of money, both in terms of military equipment as well as money. Donald Trump has been absolutely clear. He's spoken in scathing terms. Perhaps he admires him a little bit, that every time President Zelensky comes to Washington, you know, he's the world's best salesman, he said. He leaves with lots of money and lots of military equipment. So, and the worry now for Ukrainians is they can't fight the war without American military equipment and financial support. And they're really worried he's going to try to force them to a peace deal that they simply cannot accept.
Lise Doucette, our chief international correspondent in Jerusalem. Thanks very much. In Cape Town tonight, Prince William, clad in Prince of Wales check, a jacket sourced from a vintage shop, we're told, to be sustainable, is handing out this year's prizes for the awards he hopes are helping to make our environment more sustainable too. Moving away from fossil fuels by 2030 is a shared international ambition, even if many countries are well short of meeting it. But President-elect Trump appears not to share it at all. Will he take the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement again? And what difference will his election make to what America does at home? Well, James Murray is editor-in-chief of Business Green, which says it provides news, analysis and opinion for environmentally aware companies. James Murray, welcome to The World Tonight. Just on that first straightforward question, would you expect now the United States come January to pull out of the Paris Agreement again?
Absolutely. I think everyone involved in the UN climate negotiations is fully expecting that to happen. He did it last time around. And if anything, he seems even more hostile towards climate action than he was 8 years ago. So I think everyone's fully expecting him to leave that agreement.
Will it be so easy for him to reverse the policy position Joe Biden's administration has adopted on things like subsidies, credits, support for clean energy projects?
It's a very mixed picture. So there's certainly lots of things he can and will do that would row back on US climate action. He can make it a lot easier to drill for more fossil fuels. I mean, the unofficial slogan of the Republican Party is drill, baby, drill, and he would absolutely expect to live up to that. He has said, or his team has, you know, have been very hostile towards the Inflation Reduction Act, which sets out this sort of domestic policy agenda for driving clean energy investment. And there's certainly going to be aspects of that he's likely to unpick. There is a school of thought, though, that he's probably unlikely to repeal all of it, because a lot of it is pumping money into Republican states, red states, into the Rust Belt that's just swung for him. He'll be quite tempted to take the credit for the jobs that are being created. And this was criticised by a lot of green groups at the time, but a lot of that money is going towards the fossil fuel industry on things like carbon capture. There's nuclear projects, there's carbon removal projects. There's elements of the green economy that actually Republicans are a bit more in favour of. It's probably worth noting that Elon Musk is a electric vehicle mogul, essentially.
And Mr. Musk being one of his key advisors.
Indeed. And so there are absolutely areas that he's less likely to row back from. But as a general picture, he's been very, very clear. He hates wind farms. He hates solar farms. He blames them for all kinds of ills, most of which are completely nonsensical and unproven. Planning restrictions he can put in the way of these projects. And then the wider agenda of the people around him with this sort of high-profile Project 2025 manifesto is just a complete rolling back of the state and the governance of environmental regulation across the US.
But there are practical limits. So you've already mentioned the amount going into Republican states. And I think in August, Republicans who were then members of the House of Representatives said they didn't want them repealed. We also had a recent Supreme Court ruling which makes it harder for agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency to interpret environmental laws differently. So presumably, even if he puts a climate skeptic to run the EPA, that Supreme Court ruling will limit what changes they could make unless the law is changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think if people are looking for some potential silver linings here is that when he came in last time with a sort of full-blooded commitment to attacking climate action, climate skepticism, the guardrails around him institutionally and indeed the general international response kind of kept him in check to a degree. It's a huge blow, but it doesn't have to be disastrous for climate action. There's still lots of reasons why he'll be constrained at home and why other countries will continue to forge ahead with this agenda.
James Murray of Business Screen, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much. Last December, a Fox News host posed this question to Donald Trump, already well ahead in the contest to be the Republican candidate. Was he promising America that you would never abuse power as retribution against anybody?
We love this guy. He says, "You're not going to be a dictator, are you?" I said, "No, no, no, other than day one. We're closing the border and we're drilling. After that, I'm not a dictator."
That sounds to me like you're going back...
Well, remarks like those don't appear to have troubled those who voted for him as much as the state of the economy and levels of immigration did. For his opponents, though, remarks like that one to Fox were a warning of how a re-elected Donald Trump might handle what have traditionally been seen as the guardrails of American democracy. To discuss that, I'm joined by Daniel McCarthy, columnist with The Spectator in the US and editor of Modern Age, a conservative review, and Gary Gerstle, who's professor of American history at Cambridge University. Warm welcome to you both. Gary Gerstle, first of all, isn't the fundamental point that this election has the potential to restore faith in democracy? The vote was clear, the result was clear. It doesn't appear to be being contested by anybody.
It does have that potential, and it could work out that way, but it's also the case that Trump has shown very little regard for electoral processes in the United States in the sense that he does not want to accept an election that he loses and is immediately screaming fraud about that. When he lost the election in 2020, he authorized an assault on the Capitol building, a building and an institution, the People's House, that he is constitutionally obligated to protect. And he has never shown any remorse for that act.
I get your point about what happened then. I'm sort of keen to talk about what happens in the future and whether this result gives you any more confidence in his ability a second term round.
Well, he has threatened his opponents with retribution. He has threatened to weaponize the Department of Justice and the military, stocking them with people whose loyalty is first to him and not to the Constitution of the United States, which is a sacred document. I think he has very little regard for the Constitution or for the rule of law and does not really tolerate limits on his own power.
Daniel McCarthy, I wanted to pick up something very specific that Donald Trump said. Actually, last month in an interview, he was talking about planning to sack the special prosecutor who was appointed by the Justice Department under President Biden to investigate him. And he said this: "We got immunity at the Supreme Court. It's so easy, I would fire him within 2 seconds. Does his remark, "We got immunity in the Supreme Court," suggest he sees that ruling as kind of permission to do, frankly, whatever he likes?
Well, you have to remember, the American president is in some ways very much like the King of England, and like the King of England, in fact, in the 18th century. It is a position that is not supposed to be subordinate to any other institution. It's not subordinate to Congress. It's not subordinate directly to the Supreme Court. The only thing that disciplines the presidency is, in fact, the process of impeachment, and beyond that, the processes of elections and the budget process, which provides the executive branch with its funding in the first place. The checks on abuse of power in America are really those of our institutions and our processes. They're not simply a matter of ideals.
Gary Gerstle.
Well, I think the core principle of the Constitution is the division of powers between the executive and Congress, between the federal government and the states. this division of powers is meant to limit the power of the chief executive. George III is the figure who informs the American Revolution.
He's the villain in all this.
He's the villain in all this, and the Constitution is meant to set up a system of government that would never reproduce the kind of tyranny that George III was accused of unloading on the colonies. Trump does not accept those principles dividing power, and he has to be forced to accept them. He was forced to accept them in his last administration by a judiciary and by appointees around him who told him certain things he wanted to do he couldn't do. This time around, he's much wiser. He's much more experienced as a politician. He knows much more how to aggregate power onto himself. And the guardrails in the American democratic system are far weaker than they were 4 years ago.
Daniel McCarthy, I want to put a point to you, which in a sense goes beyond Donald Trump. And that's the possible position that maybe American politics has become so polarized, the parties have become more ideological at the same time polarizing, and that binary parties weakens the constitutional checks and balances that are assumed in a separation of power system, because it's no longer the case that people will behave in a nonpartisan way. They don't see themselves necessarily as national figures. They see themselves as party figures.
No, but in a way, that's actually the opposite of what the Federalist Papers, which is one of the most important political theory documents of our founding era, was arguing. That James Madison in particular said that it's actually faction is used to check faction. Otherwise, you can't simply say that you're going to have a consensus. That's an unrealistically idealistic claim. So the polarization of American politics is actually the thing that checks the excesses of power, whether those powers are Donald Trump's or those of Joe Biden or anyone else.
Gary Gessler, just a last point on this. Is it possible that American voters actually want a president who rides a little roughshod over the guardrails because they feel that the system as it's existed has not worked for them?
Yes, I think a significant group of Americans feels that way. Trump was asked in an interview shortly after that clip of his you read about being a dictator whether he wasn't at all concerned that this would be taken the wrong way by the American people. And his response was very brief and very telling. He said, actually, I think the American people actually like what I said. And what he was saying at that moment is that I think a lot of them want a strong man to come into power, break things, break the Constitution if necessary, clean things up, give America a new start.
Gary Gersel, Daniel McCarthy, thank you both. One other non-American headline in Germany, Chancellor Olaf Scholz has sacked his finance minister and called a vote of confidence in his government, which could lead to early elections. And that's The World Tonight from James Kumarasamy, enjoying a well-earned supper in Milwaukee, and me, Sean Lay. Good night.